Hey, this is Grayson the Crewman, and I'm Ben's guest on Big Fat Fod.
What is up? Welcome back to Big Fat Five, a podcast financially supported by Big Fat Snare Drum. This week's guest is Grayson Krootman. He exploded on Instagram and YouTube over the last few years by picking a lane that he saw was lacking representation on the platforms, jazz drumming. If you can, go check out his pages, links in the show notes, before listening to this episode, because I really want you to grasp how truly amazing Grayson is. It's astounding. That being said, he certainly doesn't want to be pigeonholed into being categorized as just a jazz drummer, and that's why I was stoked to see his five drastically different choices. This is a really fun conversation, and I'm just going to start you in the middle of us chatting, so cheers. Well, it's cool too. As your PR guy now, I think going out with Billy Howerdell of A Perfect Circle is kind of like the best move for you to do for your first tour, because it's just like right out of the gates, like, this is not a jazz gig. And you just uploaded a YouTube video I just saw earlier today of you practicing along to it. I mean, you're gonna do just fine. It's awesome. So
thank you. It was so like affirming of like everything I've worked, you know, towards. And I was slated to go on the Brand X Fusion tour last fall, and that unfortunately fell through because one of the members got sick and eventually passed away, John. So that just completely dissolved. And that was something I was looking forward to, because it was still in kind of the jazz realm-ish, because it was like the fusion kind of, you know, so people were still like, oh, it's close enough. And then when I got this, I was like, well, I should go back. Then I did the William Duvall record, and the people were already like, wait, what is this? And now people are really like, well, wait, what? You know, this is the last thing we'd expect you're doing. And I'm like, well, I love it.
Well, that's kind of what you have to do in a career, you know? It makes people keep up on you. If you're like, oh, I can go away for a few years and Grayson's probably still going to be doing this one thing. It's like, no, keep up with what I'm doing. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So I do want to talk, before we get into your top five, you've been quoted with saying, well, there was an article written about you, and I'll quote the article. Grayson will call around to find who knew the drummer he's studying. He wants to know them and what drove them. How did they develop their style and what they listened to, which is exactly what we want to do with you today. But before we get into that, you've said you had a photographic memory. So how does that work? Do you remember sheet music, or do you just remember the actual visuals of the drummer playing? How does that work for you?
Yeah, so it's mainly, you know, I wouldn't go as far as, you know, I've used the word photographic memory, but I'm not the kind who can, you know, there's some people who can, they can take you up in like a helicopter and they can like draw the signal. No, that's not me. Not even close. For me, it's really, even in like math class, I always talk about this. Like the example was like in math class, it sounds crazy, but I didn't need to always remember like why it would work, but like I would picture the formula and just remember where the A was, or the, you know, the B squared, you know, that, those kind of things. Literally just remember where it was. And the way that translated over the drums for me was not so much sheet music, even though I do read and I've, you know, read music since I was very little, but it was more of simply mapping out in my mind kind of, hey, geographical areas, I'll call them, like, hey, it's snare drum, tom, then he's going to hit the crash. Oh, then he's going to grab the crash, tom, just the pattern recognition kind of thing. And then another element of that, which kind of came from my more formal background, was being able to equate the movements with rudiments. And that was like a deeper thing that I kind of figured out of like, oh, that's what a paradiddle looks and sounds like. But if I just hear it, I can, you know, just hear it. But if I see and there's no, you know, audio, the audio is kind of grainy or whatever, you could kind of tell of accent. And then two accents that are closer, and then two accents that are closer. Those kind of little, you know, tricks of the mind.
Interesting.
For me, help me kind of recognize what it is.
Whiplash is the one that comes to mind, and because last week we had Kyle Crane, who was actually a drum double for that movie. The scene that you did it, you know, note for note, was actually Kyle Crane in that video. But it was so funny. You must have been working on that all day, because you were so sweaty in that video. I'm sure people have talked about that.
That was a crazy video. So I actually I made that right around the time my grandmother passed. So I think that was the day she passed. It was either that or I made a Nate Smith video. I'll have to look. It was one of the two. And I remember I got the news and I was already working on it. And I mean, there was like, you know, I'll just obviously stay with the family or whatever. But after that, I went downstairs at like noon and just like, oh, I'm going to make this video or whatever. And literally grinded till about like 8 o'clock at night. Something crazy. I don't know. It was like 8 or 9. Came up, was drenched. Absolutely drenched. And people are like, oh, is that like fake sweat? No. My mother was pissed because I had like a puddle under the chair in my kitchen when I sat down. Oh my, it was terrible. We laugh about it now, but she was like, Grayson, we need a towel. But that video was a changing, you know, like a turning point for my, you know, YouTube and things like that. Like everyone references it. But I never really thought of it as like, I'm going to make this and blah, blah, you know. It was more like, hey, nobody's done this. People say it's impossible. Let's just do it, you know. I'll work on it till it's done.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your grandma, but in a way, it's almost like you had a lot of emotion going behind that. I mean, just like the guy in the movie, it's like, so maybe that's a reason that people subconsciously were like, there's something about this performance that he's hitting a little bit different today, you know?
Absolutely. I could definitely agree with that 100%.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just get into your top five. And so I'll just kind of list the little statistics about it, and then we can talk about it, play a little bit, and then talk about it again or some more. But the first album is, you already referenced a little bit of this guy before, but it's Dave Matthews Band, and the album is Dave Matthews Band Listener Supported, came out in 99, mm-hmm. and the song choice is number 41, and of course it's Carter Beauford on drums. So why is it called number 41?
Well, according to like the little passages of like random things Dave would say before songs, he said that it was the 41st song they wrote and he didn't have any other name for it. So he called it 41.
Okay.
I think they have 36, 40, well, obviously 41. They might have like one or two more numbered songs,
mm-hmm.
but some reason, you know, I don't know the exact reason, but I think that was it. According to like one of those little rambles he had.
He's so clean.
Mm-hmm. You can notice the bass drum is so punchy. That was the first thing I noticed when I heard it. And there's a live DVD that, you know, accompanies this CD. Incredible.
No one sounds like them. Like, there's mm-hmm. no one that sounds like them.
Not at all. It's just his cleanliness for me. His drum mm-hmm. sound. It's just the... Everything's so crisp. Even down to... It's not even drum-wise. Just the guitar. Everything is... It's like a little twangy. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a few people talk about Carter, and I always say you can hear him smiling when he's playing.
Yes. Always drives that nice bell.
Yeah.
Listen to that tom. Like, how do you get your toms to sound like that? Like, it's so ridiculous. Listen to that. Ugh.
Everything he touches just sounds like a sample of like, this is what this instrument should sound like. Go.
Yep. Listen to the snare drum. That's the aqua tree, I believe. Listen to how crisp those singles are on the hi-hat.
I've heard Mike Dawson talk about this in the past. It's like Carter and a few other drummers like Vinny Caliuta can be super busy, but they're so mm-hmm. in time and perfect for what they need to be doing that it's never distracting.
Exactly.
Oh my God. So yeah, how old were you when Carter came into your life?
He was the first big, big influence. I mean, I started playing drums at 4, and my mother introduced me to Dave Matthews Band. I mean, since I was born, but, you know, obviously when I started to like become aware, like 3 or 4, but she introduced me to reggae and rock and everything. For some reason, I just gravitated towards him and the whole band in general. And I remember specifically that DVD I watched a million times. I was maybe 8 or 9. I binge watched that DVD, binge watched the CD, every song on there. I just destroyed with playbacks and playbacks and playbacks. And it was just something, obviously the visual of like, oh my gosh, look at that giant drum set and all these little things. And, but as I got older, I started to appreciate the little things of like, sounds crazy, but hey, mom, why does my snare not sound like that? You know, yeah. Like, how do I get hey, my toms to sound like that? Exactly, you know? Or like, you know, I was asking my drum teacher, I was like, how do we tune the drums to sound like that? And I was trying to like, I remember one Christmas I wanted black resonant heads and clear tops because I looked up and apparently that's why his drums had that like mirror look. And I thought, but that was the, and I still think it's the coolest thing. But like back then, I was like, whoa, because the insides of the recording customs are painted black. So you had the black bottom, the black inside with a clear head. It literally looks like a mirror with the lights. And I was like, wait, maybe it's like, you know, the black drum heads on the bottom make it sound boomy. Like I was like a nerd. And then I was a nerd until I looked up the price of that snare drum. And then I was like, Forget it, Grayson. That dream's never happening.
You need to be a nerd with a bank account until,
A lot of money for that.
Yeah, I can see how going from, you know, listening to reggae and stuff also, you know, kind of morphed into liking Carter because he does a lot of stuff like that. Like that song starts off with kind of the bass drum on the backbeat kind of thing. He's got a lot of the, I mean, he's got influences from all over the spectrum, you know, but yeah. Yeah, I can see as a young drummer, Dave Matthews songs, and that's a live record, but a lot of those records, the drums are so, like, all the frequencies, you can hear everything, like you were saying, not only clarity with his playing, but clarity with the recording. It's like, you know, oh, that's what the hi-hat sounds like, and, you know, you're sitting on a drum set, like, I can hear everything he's doing that's in front of me, as opposed to just, he just is the example of just clear, you know.
I think it's a good example of, like you said, clarity. And for me, being very young, is also an example of, you know, away from my drum teacher, Justin, I'd be like, hey, practice your singles because they could sound like that on the hi-hat one day. And then even little things of like, as I get older and older and older, an example of, sounds crazy, mic placement. Like, how does he get, you know, how does Dave Matthews Band sound guy mic the hi-hat in the studio to sound like that? You know, those little things. Or his tom mics, like what tom mics does he use? Like things like that. There's just so much to learn from all these players, but really for him, for me, him, you know, he was just the first idol. Still is.
Yeah, I've only seen him once, and it was in the Gorge in the middle of Washington State, which is where I'm from, and they do like this Memorial Day. I think it's Memorial Day. It's in September, whatever the day, Labor Day, whatever. It's in September, the 3-day weekend. And they played three different sets, like a different set every night. And it was just, I could practice my whole life to do half of one of those sets. All right, so let's, Bork's Drum Closet, Nashville's full-line drum store. Celebrating its 40th year in business, Forks is independently owned and operated in the heart of Music City. Specializing in drums and percussion, Forks offers great discounts on all major brands and will beat any retailer's advertised price. From new and used equipment, vintage drums, and marching and orchestral instruments, Forks has something for every drummer. They offer professional rental, repair, and restoration services, as well as drum lessons. Stop by their storefront at 308 Chestnut Street, Nashville, Tennessee, zip code 37210. Or go online at ForksDrumCloset.com. All the information I just said is at ForksDrumCloset.com. So let's just go to number 2, and it's Around the Fur. It came out in 1997. Artist is Deftones, and the song is Be Quiet and Drive Far Away. And of course, the drummer is Sir Abe Cunningham. So... yeah, where were you when this record? Because that's quite the departure. Not quite the departure, but it's somewhat of a departure from Dave Matthews Band.
Honestly, this is more recent. I mean, last 5 years. I mean, I had heard a few Deftones songs, and I'd liked them, but I was never like a huge fan. Now I'm a huge fan, but I slowly like morphed into them. You know, I think the first song I heard was probably like Hexagram or something. And then just literally maybe a year ago, I was turned on to more, you know, Adrenaline, which I put on the honorable mentions. And I put this song on because I've been not obsessed, but I listened to this song a lot recently because we'll talk about when we hear it. But that, again, the drum sounds, the simplicity of Abe's, you know, everything. But I would say in general, this is more recent than the Carter stuff. Little did they think the jazz drummer would be playing Deftones.
Well, that's why I was so excited when I saw these choices.
Why? It's not only a jazz drummer.
Just so thick.
Mm-hmm.
And just absorbed in the
sound.
And
again, listen to the snare. Listen to that snare. Pop. That little fill, so simple, but just so crisp. I love when he does that little pickup. Another simple fill, but not boring.
Totally.
Place. It's just the placement of it. It's just slightly off.
I haven't listened to this song in a while. It is relentless. Just going balls to the wall the whole time.
I love the placement of the bass drum with the guitar riff, but also that tom.
And I do have to play real quick. This is probably like one of the best starts to any record right here is my own summer. Oh, I had to do it.
Yup.
Punking.
Yup.
Yeah. Of course, White Pony is, you know, I remember the first time I heard 30 Seconds to Mars. I heard 30 Seconds to Mars before Deftones. And I was like, Deftones is just ripping off 30 Seconds to Mars. Little did I know.
Uh-oh. Well, that was kind of like, it was me with like, as I said, when I first was listening to Deftones, I was into like their newer-ish stuff, like Diamond Eyes and all that stuff. And then I remember I was turned on to like Adrenaline and Around the Infernal stuff. And I was like, this is different. Like, whoa, this is like so different. And I was like, this is like everything about this I like.
Yeah,
everything about this. I literally ripping off, I should say, that little tom in the chorus or whatever we just heard. And in one of these Howard L. songs, I'm doing a similar groove on the tom, but it just works perfectly.
As you should.
But you know, it's like, oh, I love this. You know, you just add it in because it just changes it enough, you know, verse to chorus, that it gives it that like depth, but it's not enough that's in the way. It's not annoying. It's just a little more punch to it.
Well, and the, you know, it, you're going to do it a little bit differently. Even if you play it the exact same way,
exactly.
It's going to sound differently.
Exactly.
It's going to sound like Grayson.
It's a completely different vibe of song too, but it was just funny. Cause I was like, wait a minute, that works.
Exactly. All right, so number three, the album is Breakfast Dance and Barbecue. Release year was 1959.
So
yeah. It is Count Basie Orchestra. And the song is Back to the Apple. The drummer is Sonny Payne.
Mm-hmm. Listen how like woody that snare drum is, and how. See, here's what I love is he's not afraid to play the bass drum. Mm-hmm. Everybody nowadays, especially in jazz, is like, oh, don't play loud. Uh-oh.
It's all upstairs. Yeah.
Uh-oh. Exactly. Like, uh-oh, you're playing a little loud. See, now it's about to get back up. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Big bass drum. I think he was using like a 26.
Hell yeah, Sonny.
Listen to this fill. Ridiculous. You ready? What I love is that nowadays that would be called overplaying.
It's a shame.
It is. Like that would be, oh, you're overplaying. You're not dynamic. It's not musical. I mean, listen to that.
I love that you pointed out that snare drum. Yeah, that is a very woody snare drum.
Yeah, it's funny because, again, I'm like a nerd with all this stuff. And it started back in like the Carter days of researching the gear. And that's kind of what I was talking about in that quote you're reading about how I try to delve deep. It's like, I won't say I obsess over somebody, but to learn how they, like why they play the way they play, you know, well, what drums are they using? How are they setting them up? How are they tuning them? Like those basic things, but literally researching, you know, what drums he was using. I mean, I'm surprised because he has the facility of somebody, you know, on the level of Buddy Rich, all these people, right? But it sounds really crazy, but like Louie and Buddy and all these people, they were using tighter tuned snare drums, you know, on at least the top end, not all the heads, to help, you know, with rebound too. You know, that's the reality of it. But what I notice is he can get equally clean singles. His snare is not tight at all. This man is like, that is a nice woody sounding deep snare drum, yet he's mm-hmm. pumping them out.
Yeah, I don't, Sonny Payne, I mean, I'm not the one to say, like, I know a lot of jazz drummers. I know, like, you know, the top 10 that people always reference, but I guess I just don't, I haven't really been down his rabbit hole of stuff he's been a mm-hmm. part of, but that guy is solid.
So ridiculous. And the funny thing is he was known for his showmanship. I mean, he would toss the sticks, he would throw the sticks, flip them up, do these crazy tricks in between the solos, and people came to see that. And that's something I love is like, hey, let's admit it, you're an entertainer too. Why not embrace it and have some fun? That's how I view it.
All right. Well, no, I've said it on the podcast so many times that there should be a drinking game with how many times I say rabbit hole, but I do want to go down Sonny's rabbit hole because that guy sounds amazing. All right. So number four, it's the album is Opiate and the release year was 1992. Again, you're just zigzagging all over the spectrum and I love it.
I love, dude. I'm being honest. This is stuff I listen to. I listen to everything.
That's perfect. All right. So it came out in 1992. This is Tool. And the song is Cold and Ugly Live. And Opiate is an EP. It's not a full length. And the drummer is Danny Carey. Yeah. Well, let's just play it. And then we can just give the people what they want. And then we'll talk about Danny afterwards. And yeah, this sounds so good live.
Throw that Bob Marley wannabe motherfucker out of here.
Just Maynard being Maynard.
Again, drum sound, punchy bass drum, that ride cymbal is so clean. It's pingy, but it's not annoying.
Nothing seems to pan out.
I would argue it's along the same lines of what you're talking about with Carter and Vinny, where he can put so much, but it's deceiving because it's like you don't think it's that much, and then when you try to play it or you watch it, you're like, wait a minute, there's that fill too?
Yeah. All right, so number five, we're just blowing through these, and this is what I think you're giving the people what they want to hear. You're talking about Buddy Rich, so, and yeah, so the album is Swingin' New Big Band, and the release year is 1966. The artist is of course Buddy Rich, and the song you chose was Apples Live, and of course it's Mr. Buddy Rich on the drums. So let's just play along to it. Hear that reverb.
Oh.
Quite a different bass drum than Danny's.
Yeah.
I love on these old jazz records, you can hear them talking to each other.
What I love about it is there's no close mics. It's just bass drum mic and overhead.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sick.
God. Dude, if your mind wanders in any way, you're gonna be lost with those hits. I mean, jeez. Such a sick transition.
Boom, boom. Then right here. Oh. It's making me want to play this for a video now.
Oh, you have to do this. You haven't done this one yet?
I think I did, but the thing is, like, with a lot of my videos, I always feel like, hey, I'm just going to redo it and do it even better. Like, I got maybe 3 months more for practice. Like, I'm sure I can do it better.
Dago Dago. Wow.
Just incredible. Oh, everything about it. It's so clean and just tight. Now, that's an example of the other side of the Sonny thing. We're talking about the snare. It's like, you can hear how tight Buddy's snare is. And we can't ignore the fact that that does help in a lot of ways with, you know, those clean singles. As much as people want to say it's only technique. I mean, it is technique, but at the same time, if you're playing with a snare drum that has, like, no tension on it, I'm sorry, it won't sound like that. It won't sound that crisp and tight. It's just a fact.
I mean, if someone says the only reason Buddy Rich is fast is because he has his snare tight, I'd be like, all right, well, conversation's over, you know? Yeah.
It's a combination, you know? It's all technique, but it also, the sound. You know, if he played that on a really, really low-tuned snare, you wouldn't have the crispness of the sound. That's the thing.
Yeah,
it would be more muddled, you know, muffled and muddy and things like that. So I just love the way he does keep it cranked. And the bass drum, again, like these guys are using bigger bass drums. Mm-hmm. Some reason I think nowadays a lot of people are like, oh, 18 or 20 for jazz or 16, 18. It's like, wait a minute, these guys are using 24 and 26. Like, I like that. Let's go back to those days.
Well, and also you have to think about the equipment they were using back then. I mean, we are so particular. I mean, I know you have your own signature stick with Vic and stuff, and it's that you sell on your website. And I'm sure you're very particular on your sticks. I'm very particular on what I use. And if there's another stick that I haven't used before, I'm like, I don't play the same way. I'm very particular on my pedals I use. These guys back in the day when did you say this was again? This was 1966. Yeah, this is. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's when it came out. Maybe it was recorded earlier than that. Who knows? Yeah. It's like they're using equipment that was like, it's like first act level nowadays of what we would assume quality is.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
I love it because like at one point, yes, I was like a nerd about gear. And then I turned a switch and I was like, listen, I need to be able to play in any kit that I sit down in.
Yeah.
Like the stick thing I get, like, like you said, like I do have like, you know, I prefer this. Now, if I have another stick, yeah, I'll use it because like, I don't like care. But I love how back then it was like, oh, you want a drum set? This is a drum set. Mm-hmm. Like I went out and I bought a drum set. I like the simplicity of it. And it seemed like it almost forced them to be, you know, if you just hear the little things they're doing, like the cross sticks and the buzzes and all these things, it's because they had to make the lack of, and it wasn't even lack thereof, because that's all they had, that's all they really knew, but just the limitations that to them weren't limitations, but to us we would see as limitation of lack of other sounds, they would make up for it with these crazy, ridiculous little buzzes and cross sticks and all those things on the cymbals and the up and down on the cymbals. Just being, try to, you know, be creative and like inventive and with what you have. I love that about it. Just, you know, ingenuity, just coming up with everything. That's like the whole thing. Like with this Commentora, you know, I'm using a pretty basic kit. You know, I'm using a 22 inch kick, 13 track toms, 16 and 18 and 4 toms. So basic, but it's just, it's all I need kind of thing, you know? It's like, I'm not the type to go on the road with like 18,000 cymbals. I'm using like 4 cymbals.
Yeah. Has Billy, I'm curious, because obviously, you know, traditional versus match grip, there's there's a certain power difference, whether you believe it or not. But has he texted you and been like, dude, you got to do match gripped? Or is he just like, do what you do? Because even in that video today, you were kind of going back and forth. And I was like, I wonder if he's going to be like, no.
Oh my gosh. No, Billy's the best. He's so fun to work with. Such a kind dude. He literally was like, hey, you got free reign, like just do whatever. But I was asking him, like, just from the, you know, the main band leader perspective of, hey, I mean, I got the support thankfully of my companies. What do you want? Like what symbols do you want? Like obviously it has to be minor, like, you know, but like what kind of sound? And it was awesome because the tracks, you know, came to me, and obviously the full album's not released. There's a single out right now that the full album's coming out June 10th. But I got the tracks and I was like, oh my gosh, like the drum sounds are, they're so specific, but at the same time, they're not. Like there's a certain ride sound I was looking for. There was a certain snare drum sound. That's obviously where you come in. But like, nice. I was like, you know, I want to get,
it's called a,
you know,
leading like question.
Nice little, you know, exactly. No, but it's true. Like you came to the rescue for me. They actually just came today, by the way, before we hopped on here. Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
But, you know, it was like a certain vibe, I would say. And I asked Billy, I said, hey, straight up, like, you know, this and that. So we worked on the sizes together, but grips, he's like, hey, whatever, you know, it's fun because I have a certain amount of freedom of, I can inject my own little, you know, style to it, which I can think will breathe a little life, you know, into it, you know, my own flavor, you know, whether it's a jazzy, you know, ride thing, whatever, ride pattern or a hi-hat thing or whatever it is. But at the same time, I just love how the tracks already laid out, you know, so it just, it's like the perfect mix of my own plus, you know, kind of like a standard that we're going for.
Yeah. Well, hell yeah. I mean, those are your top five. I'm going to give you a little bit of chance to do some self-promotion. Obviously the Billy tour is coming up, and I'll link to all that in the show notes, but anything else you want to talk about before I let you go, man?
Yeah. So as you said, thank you so much for that. Yeah. So I'm going out on tour. First show is June 11th in Ventura. We go till the end of July, almost till the end of July. I also have an album coming out with William Duvall. There was a single released about maybe a month now. But that also comes out on June 10th. That was recorded live, one take, straight to vinyl in Nashville in November. Yeah, it was live to vinyl. We did 10 songs, I believe, back to back to back. There was a 3-minute break between lacquers while they flipped it over between the sides. Other than that, it was ran through with, I think it was quite a few, maybe like 75 to 150. There was like a lot of people watching in the control room while we were doing it. It was crazy. So that was a trio recording. And then I'm also working on a super secret project that I'll just tease at, which is my own big band project, hopefully coming soon.
Hell yeah, dude.
That'll be something new. Yeah. So that'll be fun as well.
Sweet, man. Well, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I appreciate you coming on. Honestly,
it's an honor.
Honestly and obviously, I have so much respect for you and your playing.
Thank you.
And with how young you are, man, you have such a big career ahead of you. So congrats.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm going to look at the dates. Hopefully, I'll be able to come to at least one of them. I'll be on tour in June, but hopefully we can overlap a little bit in the same city. So
yeah.
I'd love to see you play.
That would be awesome. Yeah, same here. If you send me your dates, I mean, a day off? Ooh, that would be fun.
Heavens to Betsy. Let's make it happen, dude.
Imagine. Let's do it. Thank you so much.
No problem, man. I'll let you go. And yeah, have a good day, dude.
Have a good one.
All right, peace, man.
See ya.
And that's the show. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, do that. It helps more people find the show, so it'll get bigger and better, and hopefully I'll have a chance to sell out one day. But you'll be an OG listener that can brag to all your friends. Anyways, why don't you go and check us out at BigFatSnareDrum.com and follow us on all the socials. Just search for Big Fat Snare Drum, and you will find us. The show is edited in part using Isotope RX Audio Editor. It's amazing, so go check that out at Isotope.com. And thanks again to Gunnar Olson for the theme music. Bye!